Our next guest on Downtown is an acclaimed documentary filmmaker whose works include Brother's Keeper, The Paradise Lost Trilogy, and Metallica, Some Kind of Monster. His newest is a series that explores the growth of conspiracy theories. It comes to Peacock next week and is called Shadowland. We're happy to welcome filmmaker Joe Berlinger to Downtown. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Of course, Rich. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing a brand new series, Shadowland, that comes to Peacock on the 21st. Before we talk about that, Joe, I'm just curious. The world of documentary filmmaking has changed so much in the 30 years since Brother's Keeper. Now, if I remember the story, you and Bruce Sanofsky had to really go out and distribute the film yourself. And these days, we've got these streaming services that are very eager for quality content.
Exactly. No, I have been lucky enough to witness the explosion in documentaries in the last 30 years. You know, back then you were lucky to break even on a movie. I had to direct television commercials in the first 10 years of my career, in addition to doing the documentaries, just to make a living. Now, I think with Netflix going global as the initial kind of streaming service and really treating documentary content at the level of anything else has really helped contribute to this tsunami of content in the documentary space. It's pretty incredible. You know, you referenced Bruce and I self-distributing Brother's Keeper. You know, we had 6 35-millimeter release prints. You know, back then it was on celluloid, and we schlepped those prints from theater to theater, and if 400 people saw our movie in a weekend, we'd high-five each other and feel like we died and went to heaven. Now something gets popped out on a streamer. You know, this particular show we're talking about is for Peacock, but I do a lot of work with Netflix, and some of my true crime stuff on Netflix gets popped out and 100 million people see it. It's incredible. It's like I still can't believe it, you know?
Well, and obviously the digital world has made it in some ways easier to make films as well, and maybe even give you an intimacy that was difficult with the much larger equipment.
That's true. The 16 mil, the equipment wasn't the size of the equipment so much that was an impediment to really getting some intimacy. It was every 10 minutes of 16 millimeter film, by the time you buy it, shoot it, send it to the lab, is $400 just for 10 minutes of footage. Now you pick up your phone or your camera, shoot it on the card, you don't even think about the cost of actually acquiring the footage. So it's made it a lot easier. But I would argue the ubiquity of cameras, you know, the fact that everything is filmed from security cameras to iPhones to, you know, this explosion of media that we have has actually made people less authentic. I think 30 years ago, you could capture authenticity easier. Now everyone is incredibly media savvy. People are used to being filmed. There's so much filming going on, you know, that I think true authenticity is a little harder to come by.
You are certainly a guy that a lot of new filmmakers look up to as a role model and an inspiration. What did you take away from your time working with the Maisels?
Oh, man, the Maisel brothers. Boy, you know your stuff. Most people have no idea who the Maisel brothers are. You know, the Maisel brothers taught me that, you know, people don't realize this, but in the early 60s, you could not go out and shoot sync sound. In other words, you couldn't go out and get sound and image and have them be in sync, which is why documentaries until the early 60s were just newsreel footage with narration. They shot the footage and they put the narration in afterwards, and often there was no sound other than the post-production narration that's put in. In the early 60s, the Maisel brothers and Penny Baker and Robert Drew invented portable sync sound filming so that you can go take your sound recorder and your film camera and get sync sound so that you could film anything. And that led to the modern documentary as we know it, which is that filming real life as it happens can be as dramatic or impactful as any scripted film. And so what the Maisels taught me is that the idea that you can follow a story while it's unfolding and not know where it's going, and in the end, haul all that material into the edit room and create a dramatic narrative that's as compelling as any movie, but it's real because it's a documentary. I think people take that for granted today, that it wasn't always that way. So the Maisels taught me that, you know, you got to jump out a window when you're following a story and hope there's a mattress on the other side to catch you. And luckily, I've been caught every time I've jumped out the window. So.
I understand that both the book and the film version of In Cold Blood were a big influence on you.
Oh, completely. You know, the book, basically, Truman Capote's book, he invented a new form of literature called the nonfiction novel, where it's kind of the blending of the journalistic and the narrative technique, where you're not just reporting, you're novelizing a true story. And that's what I think of with my work. I think of my films not so much as documentaries, but nonfiction feature films, that they have all the qualities of a good dramatic film in terms of dramatic structure and how it's shot. But of course, it's also journalism. So it's the blending of the journalistic and novelistic technique of Capote that I feel really influenced my style. Not just me, there's, you know, I'm not the only one who says this, but for me, I remember reading that book, and it's the only book I've ever, you know, that I had to read in high school that I loved so much, I read it again on my own shortly thereafter. And then the movie, interestingly, it's rare that a book and a movie are each great. Usually if the book is great, the movie is a disappointment or vice versa. Mm. But Richard Brooks, who directed the 1967 version of In Cold Blood, it was extremely a powerful film because it was one of the first films that went out and did location shooting. So they actually shot in the real location of you know, where the Clutter murders took place. They actually used real townspeople,
right,
to be jurors in the movie. So there's a verisimilitude to that movie that spoke to me.
We're talking with Joe Berlinger. His new series Shadowland premieres on Peacock on September 21st. And let's talk about what this series is all about: conspiracy theories. Well, first of all, what makes them so popular?
You know, that's one of the things we analyze. There's always been conspiracy theories. People tend to gravitate to. There's something about the human mind that some people are susceptible to conspiracy theories. You know, when your life is not going well, you want to blame outside forces, or you want to feel like you're a part of something. And I think COVID accelerated that because people, you know, felt isolated, felt a lack of meaning, felt there must be a greater explanation to why COVID is happening. So I think COVID accelerated it. But I also trace it back to, you know, there's been a multi-decade unfolding of the blurring of the line between news and entertainment. You know, back when I was a kid, you know, there was a handful of television networks, and the division between the news department and the entertainment department, there was an iron wall, and delivering straightforward news was the benefit that the American public got by the FCC granting a license to a network, and profit making on the news side was unheard of. And that changed, particularly with the advent of cable and the 24-hour news cycle. So I think we have seen on cable TV, you know, news reporting descend into opinion journalism, and people get siloed and want to just confirm what they already believe. And then you throw into the mix social media. You know, my iPhone is an amazing thing. Like, I never, when I was a kid, the idea of a personal communicator was, you know, the stuff of Star Trek. And it is an amazing device. But information is never more available than it in history, and yet the truth has never been more elusive for some people. And it's a device that can connect all of us. You know, you can find people of like-minded interest, but ironically, we've never been more divided as a society. And I think it's because we have social media, unchecked news reporting that people just gravitate and get their own opinions confirmed, and there's no objective reality anymore, unfortunately, and it's something we really need to deal with, because, you know, the very foundation of American society is dialogue, or American democracy is dialogue and compromise, and neither of that is happening anymore, because we've divided into two camps where we hate each other and demonize each other and treat each other like caricatures, and there's no dialogue as a result. And a large part of this, I believe, is due to the mainstreaming of conspiracy thinking.
And I think also it's easy, convenient for people to put those believers in a box and label them a certain way. But some of these people are very intelligent people. How do otherwise intelligent people latch on and accept some of these beliefs that seem so out there to much of the population?
The takeaway I got from doing this project is there's a lot more people than you think who actually truly believe these things. And part of the blame lies at another group of people. There are certain people, you know, in positions of power, members of Congress, people like Roger Stone, who know better, but are using the manipulation of others as a tool for financial gain or political power.
Well, the series also looks at a very important part of the story, which is how the belief in these theories can impact families. You tell the story of a mother divorcing her husband to protect her child from those crazy beliefs, or what she perceives as crazy beliefs.
Yeah, there's a major situation going on of families and friends being torn apart, people who don't speak to each other over a disagreement in beliefs. And, you know, as long as America's been around, a healthy political debate sitting around the table, you know, has just always been a part of family life. But now it's literally tearing families apart. And, you know, we spoke to a family therapist who has 40 clients a week who are specifically having trouble because of one member or the other of the family going down the conspiracy rabbit hole. It's truly, you know, and when you start tearing families apart, when you start seeing local politics fraying, for example, we spend a lot of time at school boards and school board meetings, particularly during COVID over mask mandates, became violent if school board members were threatened, so at the local level, politics, the political process is not working. And at the national level, of course, we've seen January 6th, where, you know, we can say those people are criminals and thugs and all that and demonize them. But to me, the greater concern is that most of the people who went there believed they are the patriots, that we are the ones who are messed up and have stolen an election. It's not like it was a criminal break-in or something like that with the intent to do something criminal in their minds. It was an attempt to be patriots and save the country. And when you have that deep a division, we need to figure out how to get back on track, because, you know, a functioning democracy can't survive with two sides hating each other. We've seen civil war and genocide, long after World War II in Europe and elsewhere. And so when people demonize and characterize the other side, it's a recipe for disaster.
Hey, Joe, we're looking so forward to the series. Shadowland premieres on September 21st. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Appreciate the conversation.